Hi, my name is Gunnar Froh and I'm your host on the Wunder Mobility podcast. Welcome back to the Wunder Mobility podcast. Today I'm with Michael Barriere-Scholz, co-founder and CEO of Yoki. Welcome.
Yes, thanks for having me, Gunnar.
I'm very glad that we get to meet and speak today because you are working in a field that is yet a lot in the future, I would say. An area that we don't necessarily see everywhere yet. Not everybody has on their radar, but you are representing a company that's very far advanced and you had a lot of traction recently in this topic. What is it that you're working on? What are you trying to build at the moment?
Yeah, maybe I can explain in detail what are our core products first. We have two core products here. One is mobility analytics. We have built up a team of mathematicians, geographers, data scientists, so a lot of different competence areas. And they do data-driven decision support for new mobility, especially for demand-responsive transport. So with the technology and methods they build, explained in a nutshell, they are able to simulate how people make use of different transport modes, also which kinds of social demographic differences are there, and they can compare these habits to changes in the systems, and we can predict where new mobility makes sense and where they are maybe not making so much sense. All of these with millions of simulations, runs, and really a rich amount of data from public transport surveys and anonymized cellular phone data and so on. This is kind of our prediction technology and component. Mm-hmm. And a second product, which is more in the media, I guess, is our operating system for digital mobility, which is a rich white label approach platform to operate on-demand shuttles in the real world. Customers like cities or transport operators are using this piece of technology on a software as a service approach and run demand responsive transport services there, can be completely customized to local and individual needs and can be deeply integrated into public transport. And actually it is used in more than already 20 cities and services with hundreds of vehicles already. And the cool thing is it is suitable to operate it with drivers or with autonomous vehicles too. So completely ready for the future today.
So you are describing two product verticals. I think you would also call that. One is an analytics service, not maybe necessarily like a SaaS solution, but more a service where you analyze a lot of data points for cities to help them interpret where traffic in the city currently is efficient or not, and what the impact of some new mobility solutions could be, correct? And then the exactly. Other one is you are able to offer one of these new mobility solutions as a service, basically as a SaaS service, which is pooled ride-hailing, basically shuttle services. And I think that topic itself is not so new. Maybe Uber people might say, okay, we did this 5 years ago, 7 years ago or so, we called Uber Pool and so on, but it never really got traction in most markets. Most markets today, most cities today in Europe don't have pooled ride-hailing services of the new kind, let's say. They have the traditional, if you would call a bus a pooled ride-hailing service, it goes to a fixed schedule, but not dynamically routed. And why is it that when this idea is not entirely new, and there have been big ride-hailing players already many years ago also launching this, successful in some markets, but not in most, that this topic hasn't gained more traction yet? Because it's conceptually very obvious that we should upgrade our public transport systems with something that's more demand responsive, data driven, dynamically routed. Why is that whole field still an early thing? So when you have a launch now, that's like news, that's newsworthy basically still because it's so new still.
Yeah, this is a good question. I think the actual, maybe like you stated 3 or 5 years ago, it was more, the players who launched it, like the transport network companies in Northern America or in Asia, who started with it. But I think, or we can see it in the last 3 years, the public transport operators really saw that this is a really an important piece to invert the actual version of public transport, which has a lot of offerings with fixed timetables and fixed stations, and to invert this with technology that you can really see where people would like to go from A to B, and then exactly bring out a service who can serve this customer demand. And the first stage, I guess, was the dilemma, which we saw in the last year. Most of the new mobility offerings we saw, they had to be self-economic from the provider's view. So they concentrated completely on city centers because there is the highest density of people. And so it is assumed that the profitability is the highest there. But actually there in these city centers, especially in European counties, there's also a great density of public transport, and you have an offer for taking a bus or metro ride almost every 3 or 5 minutes, or you can use your bike or walk. And then there are these discussions of space consumptions of the new offers in the city centers. So in the outskirts, so we are actually really concentrating with our B2G, B2B customers on outskirts. It's the opposite. In most cases, you don't have so much a big density of public transport, bus lines every 30 minutes or every hour. And this is why so many people have an own car or in a family, 2 or 3 cars. And these cars are often used for commuting to the centers because it is much faster in most cases than to use public transport. And there we can avoid a lot of traffic if we connect these suburban areas or outskirts with the city centers and give people more flexible offers. For example, you order your shuttle close to a place you live, and then you are being transported to an S-Bahn or to a metro bus lines. And on the way, other people are pools and you use the same vehicles. And also, there's no need to bring your car in the city centers and search for a parking space. And this is exactly what we, for example, do at Hamburg, where you are located, together with the Verkehrsbetriebe Hamburg-Holstein, who are operating there. We are concentrating on the outskirts, for example, in Hamburg, where we are operating since 2018 now. There are 70% of the people who are using the shuttles to connect to public transport, and already 25% use them instead of their own car. And this is the thing which is different. And also these services in the last 2 years, which makes them different from the ones you stated, are completely integrated into public transport. You can use your public transport ticket. For example, in Hamburg, you can hop off there in an outskirt area. And with one ticket, you can completely take a ride just to the Elbphilharmonie and the city or so on. And this makes them different. And also they are operated by existing public transport operators and not by private companies.
So pooled ride hailing of a first generation, basically coming from this idea that like a taxi driver would now take several people. Maybe that's even a private person with their own car, whatnot, first generation ride hailing, but probably, like you said, focused on the most dense areas, and even then very difficult to run economically, if not in huge cities. And now you are taking a very different approach to using pooled ride hailing to say, okay, analysis first from a city perspective. Where are the weak spots? What is needed? And then use that probably not so much in the, well-served areas, but more to connect people from outskirts to the public transport networks. And you mentioned an example of a client, which was in Hamburg. I actually see these cars. I live where they operate. I see drivers hanging out and wait, and I see the signs, like this is a place where you can meet and so on. And your client that's using your technology is a public entity. How many, if you can say that, of your, either clients or shuttles on your system really need to run, profitably, independently, whether it's an operator launching a business to run for, or are serving kind of a public transport-like need where the operator doesn't necessarily need to run fully profitable? Yeah. Because it seems like you're more focused on actually like a public good kind of idea where it's integrated into public transport and runs then with different economics behind it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. You can roughly, it is maybe a ratio of 80 to 20. So most of the customers we serve, they operate public services. And it is very interesting because they are using this technology also to save costs, because Mm-hmm. With our analytics approach, we see a lot of areas where there are inefficient bus lines, you know, all these bus lines in suburban areas, but also in the night times, you have big buses running around, maybe running every 30 minutes, having seats for 40 passengers, and only five or two of them really use them. So these public services are also used to save costs, to operate in areas where it makes much more sense to invert them to demand-responsive transport systems. And yeah, the 20% which I was speaking about are also large corporates who use those services to serve their employees, to make the employee shuttle services better, to really pool their employees and make less usage of parking spaces in front of the plants and so on. And this is the actual mix of our customer landscape here.
We launched right into the conversation without describing a bit of the setup that you're also working in so far that not everybody might know, but it's interesting because you have like a significant size of team now working on these topics. I think you mentioned some disciplines that are working for you, but I guess it requires the buildup of significant IP to be able to offer this. And then you're also part of an ecosystem because Yoki is owned by Deutsche Bahn, right? 100%
yes.
Probably. And so can you talk a little bit about this IP and like investment that's required maybe upfront and ongoing? How easy or difficult is it? Because there are a lot of players in the field that on the surface might offer something similar. There are also smaller startups, might be 10, 15, 20 people that somehow offer software for shuttle services. And then there are other players also in your space that have, they claim to have 200 engineers on the topic. So what is the heavy lifting to do and what difference does it really make if there are now 10 or 50 or even more engineers on this topic? How complex is the problem you're dealing with, and do end customers or operators really see the difference?
Yeah, very good question. Yeah. So when I decided to join the mission of the Deutsche Bahn, which is one of the Europe's largest mobility providers, and I always saying they are also a ride-sharing company because they invented also ride-sharing 100 years ago. We first of all, before we created Yoki, we launched a so-called corporate program where we took a closer look about the disruption potential for Deutsche Bahn, which comes with autonomous driving on the streets. And together with the executive management of Deutsche Bahn, we came to the conclusion that we, as Deutsche Bahn, have to take a further look on demand-responsive transport at the current stage, state, even with drivers, and also, of course, when autonomous driving will be there. Because Deutsche Bahn is also has a strategic interest in strengthening public transport with the use of autonomous driving and demand-responsive transport systems. For example, to bring people from and to train station to the long-distance public transport systems. So we decided that we wanted to develop this technology with on our own and with our own intellectual property. And in just 3 years, we built up a team of more than 100 people now at Yokians. We call ourselves Yokians. And we are very proud that in the DACH area, we are already a market leader in regards of the numbers of services that are using our Yoki platform and technology. What really makes a difference, I think, regarding the other players, which we meet a lot in the market, and we really embrace also competition because this brings up much more faster developments and smarter solutions in the market. But maybe the special thing about us is really that we have a very, very deep knowledge in public transport, and we have a strategic interest in to really strengthen public transport with our system. And this is why also we have scaling partners like Regiobus, which is one of the largest bus operators in Germany. And also on a European perspective, we have Arriva, also one of a very big mobility player there. And we are also serving these units of Deutsche Bahn to bringing this new technology and this demand-responsive transport solutions on the road. And our existing customers, they are really looking a lot for knowledge that they know that somebody understands their existing business, because public transport is a very old and very special business. And this is what we're trying to serve. For example, in our mobility analytics teams, there are teams who also use a lot of data from existing public transport and from the existing public transport networks. And this makes it different. And another factor is why we have built up a team of already 100 people is that the integration into existing public transport technology is getting deeper and deeper, which is a good sign, because these services don't remain something like standalone and like pilots. In a lot of areas, for example, in the RMV, which we also won a tender with, they are building up a really big on-demand network on the whole area of Hessen and are knitting it into the existing public transport network everywhere, making it to a very, very deep and big transport network, integrating of existing public transport with DRT solutions.
RMV, I think that's Frankfurt area. I believe that's like a launch that you also announced maybe earlier this year. It's not so long ago. And it was marked as the biggest of this kind of operation by vehicles that was tendered out in the DACH region so far. Most of these are at a quite small scale, more like learning stage, very low number of vehicles. Can you give a little bit a sense for what's the typical size of these deals now? Maybe even the Frankfurt, what size are we talking about? And where do you see this going once it's for a region like Frankfurt, once it's getting more mature in the next 3 to 5 years, maybe? How many vehicles would possibly be needed with the simulations that you're doing? What would make sense once you move beyond, once your clients move beyond like a learning phase?
Yeah, actually, we see a growth in the size of these tenders. Of course, they differ a lot. They are very, very small rural areas who bring a service on the road with maybe just 3 to 5 vehicles, first of all, because they have not such a high density of population there. But the tenders we are seeing right now, like in the RMV areas, they are quite big. They started with launching the Heinerliner at Darmstadt. Also in Offenbach, they started the Hopper service. And when you see the complete area of RMV, then they will be operating a 3-digit numbers of vehicles there and try to grow it. Also, in a European perspective, we see the tenders. We just won also a tender at Barcelona. We are also expanding to Spain there, which is also a size of around 40 vehicles there at Barcelona. And we see that the more demand is on these services, so the more people are switching and are trying to use also these shared pooling services to be connected to public transport, the more the B2G and the B2B customers are scaling their services. Of course, at the current 1.5 years with the pandemic, it was also hit. A lot of services went down to just 30-40% of the maximum capacity. But if you see, for example, Hamburg, there were 2 DRT services with Moja and Ioki, who were serving public transport in the lockdown area, which also shows that it became an essential part of public transport within the last 24 months here. So to sum it up, we see a rise in the growth of the number of vehicles that are operated here, especially in the areas where they are cutting down existing bus lines, because a shuttle service can also subsidize an existing bus lines, where, like I stated before, DRT services make much more sense. And then we see also a bigger growth there, because you have the existing budget and the existing money from bus lines there, and then you spend it into operating of DRT service there.
What's an order of magnitude for a scale of a system like the Frankfurt region, for example, that you would foresee if it's allowed to grow freely, let's say, you know, if the money is made available and so on, that this region has probably, maybe you know better, but maybe like 3 million people or so living in the region, roughly, and probably has like 5,000 taxis or so, if that's another queue, I don't know. But you are, how can this grow, what kind of scale do you foresee if this were really accepted as an addition to public transport? Are we talking about probably then a few hundred cars driving around, or a few thousand, or even more than 10,000? What's kind of the idea how this could look like in a mature state?
Yeah, if you see the complete population of the AMV area, this is around 6.5 to 7 million people.
Okay.
So quite huge. They are serving more than 700 million passengers a year. So so quite really a huge area there. I couldn't tell it to you for the AMV area because we didn't make highly sophisticated simulations there for exactly that area. But for example, when you see the city of Hamburg and you really would like to build up a system where the suburban areas are also connected to the existing public transport areas, you probably would need a four-digit size, fleet size, to serve all these needs. But if you have a look on the existing bus lines, and if some of the existing bus lines who are not used so much or are not that efficient are subsidized by a public transport integrated DRT service, this would make a lot of sense. But if you have a look on it at scale, you probably would need a four-digit size of vehicles there in the metropolitan area.
And the cost of running one vehicle is probably like, or magnitude 100 to 200,000 per year. So maybe times 5,000, that is 1 billion per year, basically, or so. Like 500 million to 1 billion per year to run this. How does that compare to like public transport budgets in the region today? Do you foresee that then as kind of, oh, look, that's only one part of it that almost fits into today's budgets? Or would that be a future where cities spend a lot more on these systems because they, for political reasons, decide to do so because that's how they want mobility in their area? Does that very easily fit in existing budgets, or does that mean probably larger public transport spends than today?
At the current state, I think these are extra budgets at some areas. Also, the government is subsidizing this by large programs like Clean Air, Saubere Luft Programm, to really bring those new services on the road and to really pilot them and see what benefits they have. We see an approach where, like I said, existing bus lines are cut and these budgets are taken into new non-responsive transport services. And I think this will scale up. Actually, we can see an annual growth rate of 400% regarding the tender market for DRT platforms in the past 2 to 3 years.
In the DACH region or Europe? Or like
yeah, in the DACH.
Okay.
Exactly, in the DACH region. The big breakthrough or the tipping point, from my perspective, will come within the next 3 to 5 years when autonomous driving technology is really ready. Because then you can save a lot of costs by operating driverless or by using teleoperations modes. And then this kind of DRT systems are much more economically viable and sustainable than a lot of the currently existing public transport modes. And I think in 3 to 5 years and growing then, we will see a change in the mobility systems, a larger change in the mobility systems, as we can see throughout the past 2 years.
And then I wonder what the kind of landscape of also technology providers into this will look like. You mentioned this DACH focus. Is that for you just kind of where that one number came from, or in general a focus for your marketing at the moment? Would you say you're mostly like launching in and marketing to clients in the DACH region, or more European at this point, or what's the kind of geographical scope for you that you're most interested in?
Yeah, our core market is and remains the DACH area. Actually, we said, there's also the highest growth rate and adoption rate of these new technologies we are offering. But also we are fastly expanding to other European countries and are growing our teams there. In Europe, we have Arriva also as a scaling partner. We are also started the first service within the United Kingdom, close to London there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a client already launched a service with us in Spain last year. But we are also expanding to France and the Nordics, for example. So within the
quite European.
Quite European
at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
We often talk here about kind of also the market dynamics because, urban mobility is not really a free market. And often the initial expectation of a founder or like a VC investor or so is that, okay, if we have the leading technology, we have the best sales team, we are going to dominate this. And then in reality, like decisions are taken also differently of who gets to play, who's getting chosen. And I think you are a part of tender businesses now a lot. And I wonder how you see this market unfolding and who will get to provide this technology, for example, like you are doing. How are decisions made about who a city will host on? Is that all technical requirements or what are other dimensions that they are taking into account? And therefore, how does that impact basically how you will also maybe compete against other players, against US VC-backed players, maybe against other local players? Because it's not just like a free market, whoever gets their first wins.
Yeah, what we actually see is really that these new DRT offers become really part of the existing public transport system. Mm-hmm. This is why we build up this completely white label platform, which is able to deeply integrate into existing public transport systems, mm-hmm. also being able to integrate into mobility as a service apps, which is mm-hmm. also a trend. A lot of cities are launching more and more their mm-hmm. own MaaS approach, which is also, of course, served by big SaaS players, by MaaS players. And we are also connecting to these platforms with our API. This is also a very, very important thing that from a MaaS perspective, the DRT service can be completely booked and used from this perspective. And we see this development right into a more deep integration into existing in the heart of public transport as a competitive advantage for mm-hmm. us, because there's all these tenders, there's a lot of consultation work because the cities have different needs. They have different goals on a holistic level, what goals they want to reach for their cities. And with these two components, for on the one hand, with mobility analytics, we are able to serve those needs on the consultation level and also with a white label platform to bring those services on the road. We feel like it works very fine, this kind of business model we have implemented here. And it's the game has a lot of change within the last 2 or 3 years, where a lot of standalone services were launched. Mm-hmm. And also the cities are, we all know where thousands of sharing bicycles, where cities were flooded with these sharing bicycles. And I think especially the European or the DACH area cities learned a lot from this and are building up their own teams, very smart teams, who are orchestrating which kind of mobility offers they want to build within their cities. And this is what the current state looks like. Yeah.
So you're saying important dimensions for city tenders are also to what extent, how deeply can you integrate to existing public transport systems? And can you also then show up in a MaaS solution that might become popular or that the city might adopt? Because sometimes cities now white label their own MaaS solution. That integration into existing public transport sounds to me like also coming from a software perspective, like potentially like a yellow flag in terms of maybe a lot of customization, a lot of heavy lifting. Every city might run a different system, have legacy and so on. Are you seeing that? And is that something that you're then basically embracing, saying we have teams for that, we are ready for that, so we are going to not run kind of a one-size-fits-all, but we are just have set ourselves up in this way that we are going to offer integrating with whatever you have at the moment? Or am I basically dramatizing that too much?
Yeah, at the current state, this works fine because with Eoki, we also have a platform business model. Mm-hmm. So it's very important for us that we don't build too many single solutions. We mm-hmm. can only use once because we want to use them, if it's possible, 1,000 times. And actually, maybe I can say it's an 80 to 20% ratio. Of course, we are also building single solutions for some cities or for some operators, which they really need, where there is a local need. But 80% of the requirements we are developing here, they really have a platform effect. For example, in Hamburg, we are integrating into the app the informations of the timetables of all the public transport, modes of transport, so that you can have multimodal and intermodal rides. And as a passenger, you also get the information on this. This, what we are building here, can be used Germany-wide, for example, and we have a cool platform effect on this. And what we also see is that our customers see us as a partner, as a consulting partner, with all our background from technology and DRT, but also from public transport. We sit together on a table and are crafting the best solution that is possible, because our knowledge in the European market with a lot of different customers also helps our customers to see how other customers have implemented this or that feature. And then they hop on maybe to an existing standard and say, oh, wow, this is cool. I can use this one. I was thinking maybe too difficult, first of all. And this is also what happens, and which we are very happy about. That is, it's not this DRT business. It's not working like a software factory where there are hundreds different single solutions on the market, but also we have platform effects here.
And how does the value chain look like after you, when you provide the tech solution and you can license it out? And maybe there was some customization involved to integrate into their existing public transport infrastructure. Who is running the day-to-day operations? Is that typically on the client side, people that they have already, or do you have partners that are specialized on driver services and that you would recommend? How do you typically solve this part, or do you even in some cases offer that in-house?
Yeah, this depends. We as Yoki are a completely asset-light company, so we are really providing the technology here, but also we have a customer integration and service team who do a train-the-trainer approach. So what we are doing typically, we are implementing this service. We are doing trainings for the drivers, show them how the driver app, for example, looks like. We are also doing trainings for the local operators who know how do they do the shift planning, for example, for their fleet, that it works very efficiently, or with all these business intelligence components, how they can see how they can improve their services. And so we are doing a train-the-trainer approach there. If a customer really says, I would like to build up my own service here, for example, with a Verkehrsbetrieb Hamburg-Holstein, who completely employed all the drivers, the vehicles, and so on. We also have scaling partners like Clever Shuttle, also Deutsche Bahn company. And they are doing the complete operations. For example, in Darmstadt, we are providing the platform and Clever Shuttle is doing all the operations there in the name of the HEAG Mobilo. And they are providing the drivers and all the knowledge, because Clever Shuttle has a lot of knowledge, as you know. They did a lot of B2C services and are doing this in a lot of companies. This is also a model we are using. Also with DB Regio Bus, we are having a lot of launches with DB Regio Bus there, where they are operating the service and providing the drivers. So different models here. We as Yoki are always a technology company, and we are providing the technology here as our core business.
You mentioned at the very beginning that one element that's also exciting is that you're building the direct or demand responsive transport solution with autonomous vehicles already in mind. What changes, and you already have actually launched some, I think one was the first, like on German roads, publicly available and so on. They are now kind of more pilot stage, but what changes when there's an autonomous vehicle from your perspective? What are some of the unexpected things? It's not just, okay, you have a driver app to tell them where to go. Now you tell the vehicle basically where to go. But what are other elements that we might not think about at first that are now different if we have this different kind of vehicle?
Yeah, yes, you're right. Our platform is completely autonomous ready, and we launched it with several partners. A first service in Karlsruhe. Also, we launched the first line-based service in Bad Birnbach in 2017. But this service we launched just a couple of weeks ago. There are three highly automated vehicles floating around in the normal road traffic there. So it is not a special area only for these autonomous vehicles. So other participants like cars, bicycles, pedestrians, and so on are sharing the road space with these vehicles. And you can book your autonomous ride right at your fingertips with an app. And then, like you said, we are sending so-called missions to these vehicles, and they only drive to stops where people are demanding a ride, and rides are shared if people are heading in the same direction. At the current state, this is not at a very high speed, but the technology works very fine. And I believe that in the next 3 to 5 years, we will see a lot of these vehicles on the road, also in a mixed road mode with drivers and driverless cars together. And then we come closer to a very convenient, and this is the game changer, I guess, to a very convenient and cost-efficient road-based public transport. Because most of the service can be very highly automated. I think there will still be a lot of people need to operate these service behind the scenes. For example, teleoperations, teleoperations unit, if really there is an incident and a customer has a demand, and then you switch into the vehicle with a camera and you talk to the clients. But I think the most important thing is really the cost side of the service, that with these highly automated services, there will be things like with Netflix, really mobility flat rates available, where you get a complete service for maybe a fixed amount per month, and you can completely consume as much mobility available everywhere in the city or in the suburban and the rural areas, what you like. And then these kind of services are much more attractive than to own a private car, because the convenience is so much higher. It is cheaper than to operate your own private car, but also all these hassles with searching for parking spaces and so on, they don't exist anymore, because you have this autonomous fleets floating around. And for me, this is the biggest change. Of course, also there are minor changes like ticket control can be done by near-field communication right within the car, and also these kind of things which need and not a lot of care at the current state, at the current services that are existing, are not needed anymore. And this will really be a game changer, I think, and will completely shape and change the kind of usage of mobility and public transport on the road that we currently see.
And who will go into a tender with a city for a service like that? Will that be the company that manufactured this pod or whatever, this moving self-driving vehicle, and then take somebody along who can build the booking layer basically and the software to run the operations, or an operator who then takes a vehicle company and a software company along, or the software company that then, or will there be sort of alliances that some companies always kind of go together? How do you see that? Well, because I think now you are typically in the lead on the tender, and then you basically suggest a vehicle or find a partner for this specific tender. But how do you think about this dynamic? Is it going to be a mix of the two, or what would be the natural state of how this dynamic between the different people that provide this value chain basically plays out?
Yeah, actually, if we follow the current tender landscape, these different value chain components, like the platform, the drivers, and even the vehicles, at the current state, some of the tenders, they are separating these, and they are really buying all these different components. And I really believe that this will also happen when autonomous driving will come more and more. This is also why we are completely free regarding partners. So we are connecting to different autonomous vehicle manufacturers. We provide an API which is able to operate maybe Easy Mile shuttles, Navia shuttles, or other autonomous vehicle providers there, so that we can enter these tenders And whatever the city is longing for, maybe they have a special need for a special kind of car, they are able to operate via the platform. So I really think the landscape with autonomous services will pretty much look like the actual state there, where these different value chain components are separated.
Interesting. Very great. Thanks a lot for all these insights that you cannot really read anywhere at the moment. It's like a cutting edge of what's currently happening. And I think that now, like, people take note a little bit. It's like funky, for example, our offices here in Hafen City, there is an autonomous bus, like slowly sometimes moving around and stuff. And you sometimes have already read it in the newspaper. But that really in a few years, that would be the dominant or at least super visible form of moving within cities because of also the political will, not so much because it just makes sense, it's cheaper and so on, but because cities want the cars out in a way, like to say it in a short form. Yeah. And this is a very cost-effective way to continue to provide a very very similar flexibility, I think, because we are all about like minutes and not changing like from one bus line to another and so on, and connecting quickly and conveniently. And yeah, it's very interesting what you've already created. Thanks a lot for taking the time here and sharing your insights.
Yes, thanks a lot again for having me and Aoki. Very interesting, and hopefully we meet each other in the market. And yeah, we are both shaping the mobility of the future. And I'm really looking forward for another podcast, maybe in 3 or 4 years, and then we can reflect our podcast from today and see
if it really
what happens.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I hope to see you in person again soon too. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gunnar. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.